we are hoping to show you just what is possible out there in our strange and wondrous world.
We travel for business. We travel for pleasure.
The story that I had to tell my American audience was very different from the stories that I had to tell to my Rwandan audience.
We travel to expand our minds.
Of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is the hippo. More people are killed by hippos than anything else.
Whether it's one state over.
I was looking for a longer treatment, like 90 days, 6 months. And my treatment plan was to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
Or halfway around the globe.
This fantastic high desert. You watch the sky at night, so you just see the Milky Way and shooting stars.
If the world's a book, why only read one page? I'm Elizabeth Hill, and you're listening to a WAMC Northeast Public Radio production. This is Postcards from the Road. The Appalachian Trail stretches from Georgia to Maine, spanning 14 states and an estimated 2,190 miles. To say it's a towering commitment would be a bit of an understatement. Every year, thousands of people attempt a thru-hike. Only about 1 in 4 actually complete the trail. The Appalachian Trail Conservancy estimates 5 people completed the trek in the 1930s. That number grew rapidly by the 70s, when an estimated 785 people completed this feat. Over the past 8 years, an average of 851 individuals have completed the trail annually. The physical and mental demands of taking on this magnificent journey is immense, which is what makes Doug Oatley's story almost unbelievable.
I was looking for a longer treatment, like 90 days, 6 months, and there was nothing really out there, and 28 days never seemed to be enough for me. I tried going to 3 different rehabs, and each time it wasn't successful. So I figured, you know, to make my own treatment plan, and my treatment plan was to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
At 32 years old, the New Hampshire native has struggled with drugs for most of his life. And unfortunately, he's not alone.
Beyond the shocking death toll, the terrible measure of the opioid crisis includes the families ripped apart and, for many communities, a generation of lost potential and opportunity. This epidemic is a national health emergency, and why I am directing all executive agencies.
On October 26, 2017, President Donald Trump declared the opioid epidemic a national public health emergency. CNN broadcasted that speech and provided the audio for us today. Roughly 64,000 people died of drug overdoses in 2016 alone, a staggering 22% increase from the previous year. Evidence points to Doug's home state of New Hampshire being one of the leading states in opiate abuse. New Hampshire Senator Maggie Hassan spoke to The Nation on Nancy Pelosi's YouTube channel in the Democratic Weekly Address on January 6, 2018.
In my home state of New Hampshire and all across our nation, families and communities are in the midst of a devastating public health and safety challenge, the opioid crisis. And the rising use of synthetic opioids such as fentanyl is making matters worse, killing people faster and with smaller amounts.
On August 3rd of 2017, The Washington Post stated that New Hampshire's rate of 24 synthetic opiate deaths per 100,000 residents is roughly 8 times the national average. After struggling throughout his teens and early 20s with drug abuse, Doug joined the United States Army and was stationed in Iraq from 2006 to 2007. However, after his discharge, it became apparent that the opiate abuse was still going to be an uphill battle.
After Iraq and everything, I just kind of like fell apart over a period of, I don't know, 10 years or so. There was several times, and I was in and out of the hospital a lot. And when it was in the moment, I was just really hoping that I would die, that I wouldn't make it. You know, I didn't want to deal with the pain anymore. And it was the hardest thing I've ever dealt with in my entire life. It was so hard to break away from. I felt so trapped.
Doug has come a long way from those hospital stays. His journey on the trail began on March 27, 2017, at Amicalola Falls, and finished on October 10th at Mount Katahdin, Maine. This is the very first episode of Postcards from the Road, Season 2, Trail of Resilience.
I hiked the whole Appalachian Trail to kind of change my life, to work through a lot of things, PTSD, and I was an opiate addict. I tried going to 3 different rehabs, and each time it wasn't successful. So I figured, you know, to make my own treatment plan, and my treatment plan was to go hike the Appalachian Trail. because in the state of New Hampshire, I wasn't able to find a program that was longer than 28 days. I was looking for a longer treatment, like 90 days, 6 months, and there was nothing really out there, and 28 days never seemed to be enough for me. After three rehabs, I decided to go for it. I kind of got everything ready, and it took about 5 weeks after I got out of my last rehab, and I was down in Georgia. I bought my bus ticket. I bought my gear. It was an amazing transition. It ended up being a lot easier than I expected it to be because I detoxed out there, and I was more focused on water and food, and I was making all these new friends so quick. So I wasn't really thinking about using or picking up, and it was an amazing experience. You know, it's hard to put into words exactly how much it changed me.
The first couple days, what was going through your mind?
The first day was okay. I got to Amicalola Falls at around 5 p.m., which is the approach trail to the Appalachian Trail. So I think it's about 8.5 miles away from Mount Springer, which is the official start. So I went up there, and there was a little shelter at the bottom of the stairs, and I think there's about 600 stairs that you have to climb like immediately up this waterfall. I was trying to convince people to start hiking with me, even though it was going to get dark, you know, in a few hours, and nobody was really up for it. So I just kind of took off by myself. You know, I knew that it was going to be the next few months of my life. I had to make some changes, and I was going into it knowing it was going to be a spiritual journey for me, and it ended up being just that. It was a crazy feeling, and at first, it's the first day of school. Everybody's got new clothes, new gear. We're all comparing. We're talking about pack weight, and it was really just way too much to think about, to even think about my old lifestyle. It all happened so quick. I mean, there was times when I was hiking alone where I'd reflect back on it with a whole different light because I was in a different situation. I was immersed in nature. I end up making a lot of friends along the way. So I ended up slowing down my pace and hiking with them, you know, and then I'd lose people, and then I'd bounce back into them. So we were constantly slinking. It's more of a social experience than I ever expected it to be. And I made a lot of lifetime friends, a lifelong friends that I'll have forever.
What do you bring on a trip of over 2,000 miles? How do you prepare yourself for that?
You just kind of got to go for it, you know? So, I mean, you got to put yourself out there. And there was a lot of people I met along the trail that have never actually backpacked a day in their life, never had an overnight trip. I just did my research, watched a lot of YouTube videos. I watched this girl named Dixie on Homemade Wanderlust. And it's extremely informative. And she tells you, like, pretty much everything you need to know, from hitchhiking to what kind of backpack is good for you, and just kind of winged it, you know, once I was down there. So you just start going north, follow the white blazes.
If we met out on the trail, what would be in your backpack right now?
I usually have a sleeping bag that's in a waterproof bag, and then I have a one-person tent that's made by EMS, it's the Velocity One, and a little MSR pocket rocket stove with a little teapot. I like my little teapot. I cook all my meals in that. And I actually carry a waterproof case for my cell phone and my batteries and headphones like that. A lot of people don't carry that because of weight, but I like to have it because everything's protected. And then I also carry a clothes bag. So I carry a puffy jacket, two long sleeves, long pair of pants, shorts, and four pairs of socks. And then I carry a food bag.
That is one thing my brother always tells me to carry, is socks.
It's really nice to have one dry pair of socks for nighttime. I have a specific pair just for night.
What are some of the amazing things that you saw on the trail?
Oh, man, there was a lot. There was one night that we were on McAfee Knob. I was there with my friend Mariah, who came down from New Hampshire and hiked with me for a month. And we cowboy camped on top of this cliff. So we sat there and we watched the sunset, and then we got to see the full moon come up over Roanoke, and you could see the lights shining down below. And it was just like the most amazing night. And then there was another time in Grayson Highlands there was these little wild ponies all over the place. And it was just amazing. There's so many beautiful sunsets and sunrises. The whole experience.
Yeah, there's something spiritual just about you and nature. A few weeks after our interview, Doug reached out and wanted to include some reflections that he had while on the trail.
There were days I was completely stuck with my own thoughts,
For example, there was one morning I woke up and there was 2 inches of snow covering my tent all over the ground. I'd walked in the rain for the past few days, so I was down to one dry pair of socks. My shoes were like frozen ice cubes, and I decided to put shopping bags on my feet with the dry socks on, then just shove them in my shoes and hike on to get warm. It ended up being one of my most miserable mornings on the Appalachian Trail. But a couple hours later, after, you know, hiking up this mountain, I finally got to this observation tower and I looked around and it was just so gorgeous. It was just, there was white snow all over all the treetops, and it was just so beautiful that, you know, the tears just started rolling down my face, and I had this feeling of overwhelming fulfillment and this, you know, this feeling that I knew I was going to make it. I knew I was going to go on and lead a happy, healthy life. But, you know, I gained a lot of confidence in myself back, and I learned most importantly to love and respect myself again. Just by changing my surroundings and immersing myself in nature was the best thing I've really ever done. There were days that I'd remember from my childhood that I've forgotten all about, and other random memories, some good, some bad. And there was nowhere to hide from the memories. There was no substances to take to mask them. I had to face them and deal with it. I had to, you know, get comfortable enough with myself to recognize toxic thoughts and dismiss them. Because I was on the trail, I had a lot of pride in what I was doing, and it made retraining my brain so much easier because there was no outside social distractions. There was just beautiful plants, rocks, and roots, and if I was lucky, a nice view or sunset to look at and reflect. But most days for me were kind of like a walking meditation, and the lessons I've learned about myself, I'm sure I'll carry with me for the rest of my life.
I first heard about Doug's story in a Facebook group that we were both mutually involved in, for hikers around the world. I became invested in what he was sharing, and so I wanted to know what's next.
Well, I'm kind of debating whether or not I should do the Pacific Crest Trail. That might be the next thing. You know, I'm already kind of missing the trail, I'm not going to lie. It's only been 3 weeks. I mean, it's great to be home. It's great to feel like I'm part of society once again, but you know, there's times that I do miss just being out in the woods and being so free and just, you know, having no worry in the world except for, you know, getting my miles for the day and where our next water source is. When I went out there, is like, you know, I had a lot of goals, and one of them was like, if I complete this, then maybe I can do something that can actually help people. And that's why I made the post in that hikers group. I initially said that I wanted to, you know, I just announced what I'm going to do to the public in a way. So it held me accountable for staying clean and doing the right thing and then finishing this thing, because I had a couple thousand people that really actually cared, you know, and they reached out to me and asked how I was doing. They're like, we haven't seen an update from you. Like, how are you? And they'd ask, you know, what I've been up to and ask about trail life. And I had so many strangers that cared about me, and it was an amazing feeling. You know, I felt that I was held. I have to hold myself accountable, and you know, and do the right thing. It was the best thing I've done.
I want to thank Doug Oatley for joining me on this episode of Postcards from the Road. If you or someone you know has an issue with substance abuse or mental health, have them reach out, or you reach out. 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357 for 24-hour information and services. Shout out to our friends at New Hampshire Public Radio for audio assistance on today's episode. And audio clips were made possible by CNN.com and Nancy Pelosi's YouTube channel. Postcards from the Road is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. I'm your host and producer, Elizabeth Hill. And our theme music is Cherry Blossom Wonders by Kevin MacLeod. As always, if you like what you hear, subscribe on your audio app of choice. Visit WAMCpodcasts.org for more information.